Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. Have you ever had a tour of the inside of the stunning United Nations headquarters building in New York City, or have you at least driven by it? It's located right on the banks of the East River on an 18-acre site with views of Brooklyn right across the river. Well, it wasn't supposed to be there. It was supposed to be here in Connecticut, in Greenwich. Well, here to tell us this unbelievable story of how the UN almost consumed most of Greenwich is Robert Marchantz. Robert's a veteran newsman with the Greenwich Time newspaper. He wrote a local history book, Westchester, History of an Iconic Suburb, and he calls himself a student of public policy and public safety. He'll be along in just a moment with this incredible story. This week's trivia question. Back in the 1970s, thousands of people used to line up at night on a street in Bridgeport to try to catch a glimpse of it, or at least hear it. What is it? Well, stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. Yale New Haven Hospital was the very first hospital in Connecticut. They opened their doors 200 years ago and later introduced the entire country to the use of penicillin and chemotherapy. Today, some of the brightest minds in medicine choose to work there, and it's the primary teaching hospital for the prestigious Yale School of Medicine. For more information, log on to ynhhs.org. That's ynhhs.org. Turtle Bay in New York City. No, it's not water. It's actually a neighborhood. Maybe you've heard of it. They also refer to it as Midtown East. There's a lot of very impressive New York City addresses and well-known landmarks within this Turtle Bay neighborhood. St. Patrick's Cathedral, for starters, Grand Central Station, the Chrysler Building, the Four Seasons Hotel. Maybe you've heard of the luxurious Sutton Place South apartment complex, and yes, even Trump Tower. Well, one other very iconic address, the United Nations. Now, occasionally here on Amazing Tales CT, we'll cross the border into Massachusetts or New York to complete a particular story about our state history, and well, so it is today that we venture to the banks of the East River in Manhattan to tip our hat to the fantastic UN complex, which is going to be 75 years old this year. Now, what you may not know about the UN is that it actually wasn't supposed to be in New York City at all. In fact, if the UN Search Committee had had its way, the UN would be in Connecticut, North Greenwich, to be precise. Now, the story of why it's not in Connecticut is incredibly intriguing and full of rather tantalizing political and social drama. So we're fortunate to have with us today an expert on the topic who will sort it all out for us, Robert Marchantz. Robert wears several hats and has a lot of interests. He's a journalist, an author, a local history enthusiast, and a student of public policy and public safety. First and foremost for today's episode, he's a veteran reporter with the Greenwich Time newspaper. And as you're about to hear, that newspaper was at the center of one of the more epic territorial battles of the 20th century in the United States. Robert, I want to set the scene for what was going on at the time so that people can get their minds around what was happening in Greenwich, Connecticut. So it's 1945, World War II is over. The Allies have won, but they've lost a lot, too. They've lost a lot of people. There's a lot of, you know, sort of grim determination to try and make sure that the world can come together and never have something like this happen again. So 51 countries band together and decide they're going to form this free city of the United Nations, this vast international city like Vatican City in Rome. And what they do is they form a secret committee to take a look at sites. And what can you tell us about that?
The site committee for the United Nations looked at a range of locations for the future home of the United Nations. They initially met in San Francisco. San Francisco had its drawbacks. The European delegation did not want to travel to the west coast of the United States. The New York City area was seen as desirable, given its proximity to New York City and transportation hubs. Lower Connecticut presented itself as a beautiful location, jewel-like setting close to New York City. Backcountry Greenwich is known for its natural beauty, and it was seen as a place where diplomats could come together and in a tranquil setting work out the world's problems. I think that the Filipino ambassador said the natural beauty of Greenwich lent itself very well towards calm deliberation and diplomacy. So the site committee, headed by a Yugoslav diplomat, chose Greenwich as its preferred alternative.
So there's a hotel in Ulster County, Mohawk Mountain House, where actually during World War II, there were discussions held with Japanese diplomats and FDR's team. And I always put in my mind after reading your article that this is kind of what they were trying to create in Greenwich.
Yeah, there's a long tradition of kind of quiet, gentlemanly diplomacy in resort towns. And Avril Harriman was one of the power brokers of the international order, and the Rockefellers, John D. Rockefeller and William Rockefeller. And yeah, they would have these kind of enclaves and get-togethers, little rich financiers and power brokers getting together sort of in secret in these rustic rural locations and solving the world's problems, or at least trying to solve the world's problems. That was sort of the model for a lot of these discussions.
So now this is all going on in secret. How did Greenwich find out about this?
Prescott Bush, banker and the father of George H.W. Bush, was a town leader. He was the moderator of the representative town meeting in Greenwich. He had good sources in the State Department who told him that the site committee for the United Nations had chosen the north end of Greenwich for the future home of the United Nations. And Prescott Bush passed this along to Bernie Udane, who was the editor of Greenwich Time newspaper. And it was front page news in Greenwich Time, and it landed like a bombshell that the north end of the town would be turned into a United Nations city, a Vatican of international diplomacy, and that over 1,000 local residents would be displaced for the UN home, which was known as Unoville locally.
Now, as you and I both know, me a former journalist, you a current journalist, a lot of times when people call up with a story like that, they have a purpose. And Prescott Bush was not in favor of this plan, was he?
That's right. Yeah, he was one of the leading opponents. Him and a number of other very well-connected Greenwich residents put together a committee called the Greenwich People's Committee to fight the location of the United Nations in Greenwich.
Now, let's talk about this and try and map this out so people can visually come to terms with what we're talking about, this 42-square-mile area. I mean, the Merritt Parkway cuts Greenwich almost in half with the northern half and the southern half, and essentially, we're talking about the entire northern half of Greenwich being consumed by this, along with some of Stamford to the east and North Castle in Westchester County to the north. And it's this gigantic area. And tell me about what some of these structures are going to be that were going to be on that.
It was envisioned that there would be a 12-story modernist office tower, a hotel for 3,000 people. Unoville would have its own fire department, its own police department, four-lane highway leading into it. There would be a spur from the New Haven Railroad. It would be an enormous city within the confines of backcountry Greenwich, and it would have really destroyed the small-town New England charm that Greenwich is known for today.
I even heard they were going to have churches and schools and a hospital. I mean, like you say, a complete city.
Yeah, that's correct. It would have been an urban enclave within the rolling backcountry of Greenwich.
And when you think about what's there now, it's just so hard to conceive of this. I mean, really, you have, you know, polo clubs there today. You have, you know, country clubs, the Whitby School, the Sandwich Club. All this would have been consumed by where the UN is.
Yeah, that was the plan. They would have kicked everybody out. 1,000 people would have lost their homes, probably, you know, demolished all that. And in its place would be this gleaming modernist home of international diplomacy. Yeah, it would have completely eviscerated what we think of as Greenwich today.
One of the very interesting angles on this story is this is one of the big first times that the term NIMBY comes in, you know, with the not in my backyard. And this turned into an international situation with people overseas saying, oh, those millionaires in Greenwich, they don't want this. And meantime, other people, you know, who are patriots saying we do, others saying there's a business opportunity, others saying it's going to disrupt 1,000 families and throw them out. This was tumultuous.
Yes. When I wrote about it in a history column for Greenwich Time newspaper, I called it one of the biggest NIMBY fights of all time. And it really inflamed passions on both sides of the line. There were actually vocal supporters. There were quite a few local residents who wanted the United Nations to come to Greenwich. There was a man by the name of Alton Ketchum, who was a leading proponent and wrote letters to the editor. They viewed it as an idealistic cause to have the United Nations come to Greenwich. They were sort of imbued with a sense of altruism and world peace. The governor of Connecticut, Raymond Baldwin, was also a major supporter. And there was also support in Westchester County as well. And the local newspaper chain in Westchester was also in favor of the UN plan. And an editorial said, some private individual interests must suffer. Remember, we are not building, you know, merely for pleasure or for sanitation or for health or any other relatively local justifiable reason. We are building, you know, to preserve peace permanently. And the threat of World War III with the atomic bomb was worthwhile enough to displace homeowners. On the other side, though, many Greenwich residents hated the idea of being displaced from their homes. 1,000 or more people would have lost their homes. This became kind of an international spectacle, and it was picked up by wire services and newspapers around the world. The Daily Mail in London said, the millionaires of Greenwich are angry. A lot of humorous newspaper humor columnists had a lot of fun with it. Camels roaming around Greenwich Avenue or Swiss yodelers waking up the people of Greenwich in the morning. There was a great sport at sort of prodding Greenwich as, you know, being sort of the snobby opponent of world peace and the United Nations. So it was an international spectacle. One of the leading opponents of the plan, advertising executive by the name of Amity Cole, said it would completely destroy the character of Greenwich as they knew it.
Now, Amity Cole spent $50 on three individuals to map out some scary concepts for downtown business owners. Can you tell us that side of the story?
Yeah, Amity Cole was an executive at J. Walter Thompson. And this was in the great age of stunt advertising. People don't remember this now. Stunt advertising was a way to get the message out and create word of mouth and buzz. So Amity Cole had the same idea to create sort of a furor. And he hired these three men, three laborers. One of them might have been Irish. Two of them were apparently Syrian. They walked around and spoke this kind of Pidgin Latin. Two of them were wearing a fez. They marked out chalk marks on Greenwich Avenue with the idea that even the merchants of Greenwich Avenue would be thrown out and evicted from their properties as a result of Unoville. And he later said it was the best $50 he ever spent. It earned them hundreds of new supporters in their fight against the United Nations.
This story has a couple of very interesting characters besides that involved. One is Alger Hiss from the State Department. What can you tell me about his involvement?
Yeah, Alger Hiss was one of the delegates from the State Department to the United Nations Relocation Committee. Hiss was later accused of being a Soviet spy. He told Greenwich, sorry, we're just going to have to live with it. But Greenwich thought otherwise, and they put up quite a fight.
When you talk about NIMBY fights and lively debates, I've been involved in a couple over the years and certainly understand them. This one took on just, as you put in your article, I mean, this was just gargantuan in terms of the importance of this debate. And so much pressure on the town to take this new United Nations headquarters, or Unoville as they were calling it. But after this debate, they finally decide at the representative town meeting to sit down and have a vote on it. How'd that go?
A referendum was held in Greenwich. People voted no by a very wide margin, 73% or so. It was about 3-1. And the vote was held on March 2nd, 1946. And similar in North Castle, too. It was 5-1, 6-1. People voted no. It created quite a conundrum for the UN, even though they settled on Greenwich as their leading option.
And you're right, and they ended up having to look at other sites. I know Bear Mountain State Park was one of them, and some other sites around in New York and New Jersey and around, and even other cities that wanted it.
Philadelphia put together a very enticing proposition. Boston was in the running. Stanford made a proposition. San Francisco also. So lots of other cities were in the running.
But what actually ended up happening was in 1946, a guy who actually owns some property in Greenwich goes and buys some property in New York City and hands it over to the UN. Tell us that side of it.
Yes, enter the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers had a long interest in international relations and building an international community and using diplomacy, international diplomacy. They were always great proponents of that. Nelson Rockefeller and the rest of the Rockefeller family. Nelson Rockefeller, he was going to be the future governor of New York State and the future vice president, was in his 30s at the time, thought that they could come up with a solution. Nelson Rockefeller spoke with his father, and they settled on a plan to buy a 14-acre parcel on the east side of Manhattan, tenements, former slaughterhouse. They would acquire that property and turn it over to the United Nations, and that's eventually what happened. But as people pointed out, it was a lot easier to evict tenement dwellers in Manhattan than it was people who played polo and estate owners and rich people in Greenwich.
And Greenwich could have been right at the heart of it. Imagine what you'd be covering today as a reporter there.
Yeah, I'm a little bit jealous. Yeah, I'd certainly like to be on the United Nations beat. I wouldn't mind that one bit.
Well, that wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. Now, just to show you how much security has impacted us today, back when I was in elementary school, I hate to say that was the early 1960s, we were on a class trip to the UN, and they let us actually sit in the diplomats' chairs, put on their headphones, and then switch the knob on the handle there so we could hear the different languages that were being translated for all the diplomats to hear. Incredibly impressive. Today, well, you can't even sit in the seats. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Robert Marchant, veteran reporter for the Greenwich Time and author of Westchester, History of an Iconic Suburb. The answer to this week's trivia question, the question was, back in the 1970s, thousands of people used to line up at night on a street in Bridgeport to try to catch a glimpse of it, or at least hear it. What is it? Well, the answer is the Lindley Street Poltergeist. The next week on Amazing Tales CT, before you go and write this off as another supernatural hoax, you ought to know that the Lindley Street Poltergeist is still considered to be one of the most potentially credible supernatural stories in the country. We're going to look to separate fact from fiction on next week's program. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe and please stay healthy.